Two peas in a bong. Two peas in a bong. Two peas in a bong.
Two peas in a bong.
Two peas and a bong.
Y'all, two peas in a bong in the building. It's your boy DP.
It's your boy KP.
And back from a lover's hiatus, it's Bong. What's good?
Yeah, man.
All right, man.
We did Valentine's. What? That was we took a 2-week break for Valentine's Day, man. I hope y'all motherfuckers got that shit out your system.
All right, man. So the last time we spoke, we were wrapping up the discussion about the Super Bowl. You know, so it was some football talk. So basically, folks are thinking, you know, as the Super Bowl goes, so goes the end of football for the season. However, you know, COVID has kind of jacked some things up schedule wise. You know, if anybody's been following college football, you do know that there have been some schools that did not play and who just chose not to play for the entire season. Some schools who started on a later schedule, that being the SWAC, as one of those conferences, those college football conferences, the Southwestern Athletic Conference, a conference full of historically black colleges, but one we're going to focus on in particular is Jackson State University. The reason why we're going to focus on Jackson State University is because prime time. Deion Sanders is now the head coach of Jackson State. So those of you who have been following know that he is leading the team, and they started their schedule. Their first game was on February 21st, okay? And the season was scheduled to go through to April 17th, but that game on the 17th against Alcorn State has already been forfeited. But their season got off to a good start with a 53-0 victory over Edward Waters. So, all those particulars to the side.
Who was Edward Waters, you say?
I don't know.
they're an NAIA school.
Edward Waters is the church choir director down the street who put together a team and was like, hey, fellas, come holler at me.
I thought it related to Maxine Waters.
All right. So, as you all know, we've talked about coaches, African-American coaches, you know, on the NFL level mainly, and how they've been treated and stuff like that. But this, you know, this will relate to that and probably bring up a couple other things into the mix. But first off, I just want to ask you guys, just in general, this move with prime time going to Jackson State University, do you think it's a long-term move? Number one, and do you think it will change the way the athletes, the student athletes, think about HBCUs?
I don't know if it's a long-term move because I don't know to what extent Prime is dedicated to the game, right? He reminds me of Magic Johnson when he came to the Lakers as the general manager, and you have so many successful things going off the field. You have so many other business enterprises that you're you know, intertwined with. Can you really dedicate your time, all your time and energy, like all the time and energy it takes to really coach a football team, a college football team, where you're going to high school games, you're recruiting, you're going and meeting with parents and potential athletes that are coming on the squad? Like, you know, it's the hard work, the grind that goes into it. And I don't know if Prime has that in him, because Prime is a, you know, he's more of a Hollywood figure. You know, I want to get out there, sell you off my name, similar to Magic Johnson. Hey, it's Magic, baby. It's showtime. When I show up, motherfuckers smile. I get deals done, but I'm not finna put in the work behind the scenes. So is Prime going to do that? he has incentives because he has two of his sons there. So yeah, he's locked in now, but eventually, you know, your sons can't play. It's not a professional team. So your sons can't play there 10, 15 years. Once they move on, are you willing to continue to put in the work to do what you have to do to make shit pop? I don't know if he does, if he has that in him. But even if it's a short term thing, I think it's a good thing for college basketball, college football, excuse me. And it's a good thing for HBCUs, because while he's there, he can garner that respect from five star, four star athletes and get those commitments to flip, to come to a Jackson State. And also by being a pioneer or trailblazer on the coaching circuit as a prominent ex-NFL player, he can potentially encourage other prominent figures to go and, you know, take on positions that they normally wouldn't do. So, you know, I think it's a win-win across the board.
So I'm going to say that I believe that this is a long-term move. And the reason I'm going to go with a long-term move, I'm looking at UCLA's football schedule. And UCLA, this is the first time that they'll face historically black colleges and universities. They've got a game scheduled September 10th of 2022 against Alabama State University. Shout out to Alabama State, which I did attend Alabama State for a year. That's neither here nor there. And then the very next year, September 16th of 2023, they go against North Carolina Central. Shout out to Ubon.
That's going
to
be the West Coast homecoming, just so you know. We're going to turn that motherfucker out. I'm going to put that on the table first. We turning that bitch out. Okay. So.
I like LaVille Moton style too, man, by the way. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's on the basketball side. He's legit.
That's on the basketball side.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying, just connecting that to just sports with North Carolina Central. I like his style. So.
Oh, yeah.
But go ahead, Kevin.
So I say all that to say this. Now you got your PWIs and your Power Five conferences starting to schedule games, these what you want to call tune-up games against these HBCUs. All these HBCUs need is a chance. That's it. And you're going to find an upset. So, you know, eventually, if Prime decides to stay at Jackson State University, he will be scheduled in an early season game as a tune-up game, and that's when he's able to shock the world. And then again, you look at recruitment. Now, if these Power Five conferences are scheduling HBCUs, now it's a win for the HBCUs, because now you can tell the athletes at the HBCUs that you're playing against Power Five schools. So that's another win, and that's big for recruitment.
I'll just say this really quickly to jump in there, Kevin.
Okay.
For those who are wondering, you know, which teams are in or which universities participate in the SWAC, historically black colleges, of course. You know, we're dealing with HBCUs here, so they have an East Division and a West Division. So East Division has Alabama State, Alabama A&M, Alcorn State, Jackson State, and Mississippi Valley State. The West Division has the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff, Grambling State University, Prairie View A&M, Southern University, and Texas Southern University. So people can kind of put that into perspective what the teams are looking like in there. But Kevin, go ahead.
So now looking at you know, the landscape of everything, we always talk about starting our own leagues. And this is a situation with Deion Sanders going to an HBCU. This can kind of spearhead the process, because you're taking them at a grassroots level. And I'll say that college is the grassroots level, right? Because now their athletes are about to start getting paid. So you can take them at this grassroots level and you can start molding these players. Well, Deion Sanders is connected. You start getting these guys together, and now the first thing you're doing is you're changing the landscape in terms of where children need to go to get noticed and get seen. Now they can go to HBCUs and play against Power Five conferences, as opposed to being, you know, just handicapped by playing against just HBCUs and not getting the notoriety and not getting noticed. So you put them on notice that way. But as you do this more and more, you're starting to get the better athletes to go to the HBCUs. And I think eventually it turns into something else because, you know, we know that coaches, that teams are capable of winning with black coaches. We know this. We know that coaches are capable of putting together programs. And now Deion is about to show you that not only can he coach, but he could put together a program and build a program from the ground up. And as they see that and more black folks start to see that, I think eventually we'll mold together and start doing our own thing.
I want to go back to the Alabama State and the North Carolina Central topics you or points that you made.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to understand the significance of those two games, we got to go a little, just a touch deeper, right? So recently, I don't know how publicized it was, right? I don't know how publicized it was. You know, I follow all things sports. So I remember it being a thing, you know, in a smaller circle, but not really on a big stage. But UCLA hired its black athletic director, dude by the name of Martin, and I hope I'm not messing up his last name, but Jarmond. So Martin Jarmond, J-A-R-M-O-N-D. This was, I think, like within the last year, 2020, they hired their first black athletic director. I don't know if it's their first black athletic director, but it's a black athletic director. And he instituted that schedule where UCLA, for the first time ever,
yes,
the first time ever, will host two HBCUs. And then my man took it one step further. He said, I want these HBCUs bands to perform the halftime show.
Mm-hmm.
He said he wanted to give Southern California a taste of Southern HBCU culture. So when you first said it, the reason I said like, yo, this finna be West Coast homecoming. Oh, I'm going to make sure of it. Like we got to turn and like I'm talking about, we got to turn up and turn out like as soon as the news was announced. Right. I already start getting phone calls. Hey, we out there. I said, OK, we tailgating. OK, we going to turn it up because the score of the game is irrelevant. You finally giving kids from the deep South, right? The forgotten, the HBCUs are the forgotten ones. You finally giving them a chance to come to the West Coast, play at the Rose Bowl, 100,000 seats. What? Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
They might do that shit down South, but that's, you know, that's Alabama, like all these other teams that line up HBCUs. Like that's more common down South because it might be interstate. Mm-hmm. It might be, you know, the state next door. The first time ever HBCUs are going to play at the Rose Bowl. And it took a black athletic director to do so. So what is that telling us? If you put us in positions, we can make the opportunities. We can create opportunities for black people to succeed. But you rarely see black ADs in college football. They say like the Power Five, I think for years, the Power Five hadn't had a black athletic director. So like you got the Power Five conferences and you have little to no athletic directors that are African-American, but a majority of your athletes are African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that we can get a fair shake. This one dude comes into UCLA and in less than a year, he's already setting shit up.
Right.
And all he's doing is just giving HBCUs an opportunity to have their name on the big stage. You know, to UCLA, they might not even, you know, you might not get that many fans that show up to that type of game because it's not like, we're going to smack the shit out of them anyway. Central might bring, you know, 15, 20,000 people.
Yeah.
Bro, we going to, it is literally, you get people from Carolina an opportunity, an excuse, a reason to come out to the West Coast. Like, fuck it, let's do it. I've seen my people from down South. When All-Star Weekend was in Vegas a few years back, they came out here. It's an excuse. So now you tell me that, oh, my alma mater or the school that I'm currently going to has an opportunity to go play on the West Coast in L.A., the Rose Bowl, where, you know, like synonymous with the Rose Parade, synonymous with the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. We get to go out there. Oh, nigga, we out there. Mm-hmm. So you know, I'm making plans already and really trying to set it up and trying to get as many people down here as possible. We got a 2-year window to make it happen. So, you know, I believe that COVID will be, you know, under control by then. And again, I'm not going to try and make this all about North Carolina Central. I will definitely try and go to the 2022 game with Alabama State just to see the energy, to feel the energy of a black HBCU in the building. And just to see like how the PWI, like just see how white folks, you know, how they take to it, like how they react to it. Like, what is, you know, like what's your feel now that you get to feel that vibe?
They because tore up the damn Rose Bowl. Can't believe it. Hey, it'll never be the same.
Things will never be the same. Alabama State, keep it cute. Keep it cute for us, man. Yeah, they come fucking that shit up 2023. They're gonna say keep it cute.
Hey, real quick, Uba. Good point about Jarmon. Just wanted to get a folks some brief history about him. So you mentioned the Power Five conferences, right? Mm-hmm. So the ACC is one of them. He became the youngest African-American in a Power Five conference, the youngest black person to be an athletic director in a Power Five conference in 2017. And he was there at Boston College from 2017 to 2020. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, he was an assistant AD at Ohio State and also an assistant AD at Michigan State. He did play college basketball. He went to the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. So in North Carolina, so he probably got a taste of, you know, what's going on down there with the HBCUs, you know what I'm saying? So that may have something to do with his flavor, you know, but a good point about him, just giving it some quick background, but I want to ask you guys a question. So if I say, hey, what's a good, we talk, just going back to Deion Sanders and coaching, right? Mm-hmm. If I say, what's a good winning percentage for a coach to have, what would you say?
I would go 60%.
60%, Uban?
Yeah, I'd say the same thing, between 60 and 70%. So 2/3 of your games, win 2 out of every 3. That's a good percentage.
Okay. So if I said, name some of the greatest coaches of all time that you could think of off the top of your head. It could be NCAA or NFL. Just give me a couple that come to mind.
Nick Saban.
Okay.
So we go any sport?
Let's try to stick with football.
Okay.
So Nick Saban. I heard Nick Saban.
You got Lou Holtz from Notre Dame.
Okay.
Bobby Bowden from Florida State. What's my man that coached at Florida, came to the NFL? Steve Spurrier from Florida.
Okay.
We'll go with Urban Meyer.
Okay. Urban Meyer. All right.
Who was the old coach for Ohio State? Jim Tressel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tressel. Okay. All right. Okay. So nobody mentioned Eddie Robinson.
Oh, Eddie
Robinson. Oh, man.
Yeah. Black. So nobody mentioned Eddie Robinson. You
damn
bums.
Damn.
No, that's okay. That's okay, because my point is, once again, just even in a regular conversation, we would even overlook our own.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because they're not celebrated like that. And the respect level isn't there when people talk about the swag.
Yeah.
Hey, DP, just DP be setting the traps too.
Yeah, he did.
DP walking down that road like, come here. No. No.
Yeah. Bitch.
He said the trap.
Oh, shit. Hey, but look, Uban, you know what, though? It's not even like I'm sitting here and I'm thinking it out, right? So if someone were to ask me, I might have done the same thing. You know what I mean? So people out there who are listening were probably naming people too, as you guys were. And same thing is happening with them, but nobody mentioned Eddie Robinson. You know, he was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 97. He's got about, I want to say, 9 or 10 national championships with Grambling State University. And he actually, his winning percentage was 69%. So he's up to that higher level that you guys were talking about. Uban, you said 60 to 70. He's at 69. So he's up there.
Oh, yeah.
But then I also want to throw another name out there who was an NFL guy who was at Grambling also. has some success in the NFL. Doug Williams.
Doug Will. Yeah.
Also has some success at Grambling. He had a national championship there as well. He had a winning record, and he also had some conference titles there. So Deion Sanders, he's not the first.
Hey, man, you got to say the obvious for Doug Williams, the black trivia question for Doug Williams, man. You
go ahead.
For first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl, Doug Williams. My grandma used to say that all the time. Doug Williams. Yeah, Doug Williams. Like, damn.
Right, right. So, you know, I say that to say this, man. So Deion Sanders wouldn't be the first to have some success, right? And by the way, before I say that, so Doug Williams, he had a winning percentage of 62.5. So he's in that range you guys spoke of also. But so Deion Sanders wouldn't be the first to do it and have success at it, right? But it just seems like there could be a different type of momentum behind this with Deion Sanders, right? So Ubong mentioned earlier, this could lead to, you know, other big names following him and coaching and doing these things, the same things that he's doing, getting affiliated with the HBCUs, building their programs. Do you guys think that is what they should actually do, given the climate of black coaches in the NCAA and the NFL and how they've been treated thus far?
Absolutely. I think it's a double-edged sword because, you know, unfortunately, if they only go to HBCUs, they're only playing each other and they're not getting exposure against anyone else. So at that point, teams, you know, there's going to be teams with success and programs with success. And then there's going to be programs that aren't successful. And then you may look at those coaches as failures because, well, they're not performing in their conference. So I would venture, I like the idea, but I don't like the backlash that will come with it because they all wouldn't win. That's my only thing.
I mean, at PWIs, they all don't win.
Right.
There's a lot of programs that are predominantly white institutions that never win. They're just in a conference and, you know, a good season for them might be going 7-6 or, you know, 6-6. So I'll say this, you know, Grambling is the preeminent program when you talk about HBCU football. Central, North Carolina Central, we had a chance to play them in the Celebration Bowl back in 2016, and we lost 10-9, I believe. And that was pretty dope. That was in Atlanta. I wasn't able to make it out there, even though I wanted to. But from what I heard, ATL was, you know, shit, two black colleges in ATL for a damn bowl game. That's, you know.
I was damn near revisiting Freaknik.
Exactly. So, you know, in a pre-COVID world. So, you know, but Grambling, shout out to them, man. And, you know, they keep a program down there. They keep a lot of talent, you know. And you got to remember, they got a lot of the talent that doesn't go to LSU, doesn't go to the SEC, that's close to home, that trickles into Grambling for whatever reason, whether it be grades or, you know, no exposure or whatever. But they keep a good program. So I think that if Prime plays it right, he's going to open the floodgates for a lot of other people to want to be a part of that experience, because we're starting to see a shift, even though it's a slow shift. We're starting to see a shift, right, to uplifting and spotlighting and just bringing attention to the HBCU experience. I don't know if motherfuckers really understand. It's a different world. Like, damn, Bill Cosby and them came out with that shit. It's a different world, right? Nigga, it's a different world when you go to an HBCU and when you go to a predominantly white institution. I took a couple classes at two predominantly white institutions. I had the opportunity to take some classes at Cal State Long Beach. So I took a few summer courses out there. And then I took like three or four courses at UNC Chapel Hill as well. So I've seen both sides, right? And even though the predominantly white institutions are more buttoned up, they're a little bit more, you know, clean cut, it's a vibe at the HBCU. Like, it's family, you know what I mean? Like, it's different. And we're going through different shit and we're dealing with different shit. And although I like to see HBCUs ascend to certain levels, that put them in the same playing field as the predominantly white institutions. I'll never take away from, you know, the HBCU experience. So, but the fact that they're bringing attention to certain shit, like you get to see things like CP3 and Stephen A. Smith, you know, producing a documentary on North Carolina Central's basketball team called Why Not Us on ESPN Plus. And the reason that they're spotlighting this shit is because, you know, y'all know I talk about the shit all the time. And I say these motherfuckers never give us no respect. Lavelle Moulton at North Carolina Central has dominated the MEAC for like the last 5 or 6 years. And he's getting teams, he's getting North Carolina Central into the tournament. I think we've been in the tournament like three years, and we're on our way to getting in there a fourth year, but it was derailed because of COVID. And he does it with, I can't remember the last time we had a 7-footer on a squad, right? He's doing it with 6'6" and under guys, getting them into the NCAA tournament. So it's like he doesn't get the best talent because you have North Carolina State, you have UNC, you have Duke, you have Wake Forest. Like you have all these schools, these big name schools with bigger budgets in the same fucking area. And not only that, they tried to poach him. They said, fuck it. You're really good with those, you know, with those black kids down there. You'd be really great with a much better budget and a much wider fishing net, you know, to cast your rod or whatever. So, and he stayed true. Like you got so, but that shit goes untold. So I like the fact that the shift has been made to where, okay, we're gonna spotlight these things and we're gonna put these things in the public's eyes. And now you have like I don't know if you guys heard about Chris Webber. He's teaching an online course at Morehouse College through Coursera, and it's called Activism in Sports and Culture, right? And he's just, you know, the course is to talk about the history of people that have been activists and athletes, and how, like, you know, like certain people paved the way, you know, people that that went to the Supreme Court and fought for athletes' rights to be able to play basketball out of high school, led the way for somebody like a LeBron James or Kobe Bryant to come out of high school, like that kind of thing. And just, you know, just highlighting the people that were, you know, were activists in the game and how they use that shit to influence the culture. Things like that. Like, you know, normally
that's a dope ass topic, by the way, for a course.
Hey, but check this out, DP. Normally, where would Chris Webber be teaching that? He'd go to Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Right? Nah, Chris Webber don't fuck with him.
Or Michigan don't fuck with him. He'd go to Michigan State and teach that course there, right? So you get famous black people, entertainers, athletes. They'll take their courses and they'll go to Ivy League schools. And now you have a rapper or you have a basketball player teaching a course to white kids to get them to understand the culture, as opposed to coming back to the HBCUs and giving them that knowledge and giving them that, you know, giving them that notoriety and that, you know, the stuff that you're giving back to the PWIs. So like you're starting to see like a small shift. It's not going to happen overnight. But I think in the next 10 to 15 years, man, we're going to see a seismic shift in the way HBCUs are viewed, man. Now, I'm, you know, for me, I'm proud as fuck. So, you know, that's a good thing.
As you should be. So a couple things on what you just said before we change. So I want to highlight, we did discuss something on Lavelle Moulton prior in episode 23 called HBCU Later. Should top athletes start marching to the beat of a different drum? So folks, y'all go check that out, because that content is definitely related to this discussion as well. So this isn't something new for us. You know, we definitely try to stay up to speed on things like this. And then just on Lavelle Moulton, I mentioned him earlier in the episode too. Man, I saw this thing that he does with his basketball players that he always does. He uses musical chairs, right? And he uses musical chairs to kind of simulate how things go in life, the opportunities that players have to go to the NBA, right? Not everybody's going to make it. And as they go around and the chances get slimmer and you snatch a chair away, there's more people. There's less chairs, still more people, less chairs, still more people, until you get to the point where so many people are eliminated till there's one last man standing. Right. Let's be honest. Look at the percentages. I think, Kevin, you had those percentages before of folks who actually go to the NBA or play professional basketball. Aside from just the sports, you have a guy like Moten who is actually teaching stuff outside of basketball that's relative to some things that they're going to face in regular life. So I think that's important for a coach to do in this, you know, just when you have a group of kids. So I appreciate that as well. And, you know, I went to a PWI, a couple of them, because I bounced around in college. And, you know, I wish, just looking back, you know, that I would have had that that Black college experience. So Ubong, I definitely respect what you said in that regard, and it's something that I actually have my kids visiting also. Like, check out some of these HBCUs and research them and see what programs they have available, because, you know, you can go there and flourish as well, not just on the sports side, which we're focusing on right now, but think about education also.
Yeah. So, and I just want to get back in touch on something, because I was saying that the coaches, if they all went to a HBCU and all coached within the conference, some would win, some would lose. And Ubon, I know you mentioned the PWIs and coaches that may take jobs and never win at those coaches. But we all know that Black coaches are under a different type of scrutiny than white coaches. So both coaches could go 4-10 and have losing records, but Black coaches would take the brunt of the criticism versus white coaches. And a white coach would be, it'd be quicker, they'd be quicker to find another job or get hired somewhere else versus that Black coach. It'd be like, well, we gave you a chance, and
you know what? Right. You know what is crazy? It's crazy because I was just watching. So you guys know who Mike Boynton is? He's the Oklahoma State basketball coach.
I do not.
So
I'm not familiar.
Okay. Another dude who I think he seems like a solid dude. One of his players, I can't remember his name. He was a walk-on. His mom lost her job during COVID. Dude was working at Walmart full time, going to school and all that kind of stuff. He actually gave him a full scholarship. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he just got just a vibe about him. It seems like he cares about their actual character and building men, just like I said a minute ago. But to your point, Kevin, he's a perfect example of exactly what you're talking about, in a sense, because they have, so Oklahoma State wasn't even ranked, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they knocked off, I think Texas Tech was like number 15 or something like that. And they just ended up beating, they beat somebody else. I don't remember who it was, but they beat somebody else this weekend recently. And they still weren't ranked. And I'm like, I look at some of the other schools who suck, but they would be ranked off the strength of who their coach is, right? So if they have the same record, and schedule may not even be as strong, but if they have the same record and their coach is a white dude who has a proven track record, guess who's going to get the nod?
Yeah,
right. White coach.
Mike Shishet. You
know? Right. But yeah, I just thought about that when you mentioned that. But let me kind of ask you a question, though, because you said something about if they all lose in the HBCU, if they all lose in the Black conference,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to see the scrutiny that comes after it, right?
Yes.
But the SWAC is probably the closest thing you have to your own league that you're talking about.
That is true. However, to create your own league, you're going to need some kind of allies from the other side, or someone from the other side kind of assisting. So I'm saying, if you take positions in other institutions, you can then schedule your non-conference games against those SWAC teams and other HBCUs. So I think it becomes a win all the way around, because now the SWAC and these HBCUs, they're getting more exposure to playing teams in other conferences. And then that leads to another team saying, you know what, let's take that game and let's beat up on an HBCU team. And by that time, an HBCU. They're going to try to get that tune-up game against that HBCU team, and it's going to be an upset. And that's when it starts to go on notice.
Okay, so the scrutiny you were saying is from when the HBCUs are losing to the
PWIs. No. I'm talking about the scrutiny of if you have all the coaches, if all the coaches are black in the same conference, you're going to have some teams that are doing well, and you're going to have some teams that are losing. Now, the teams that are doing well, those coaches aren't going to go under scrutiny. They're not going to be under scrutiny. But the teams that are losing, which they're still black coaches, they're going to be under scrutiny. That's what I'm
saying. Okay. And I thank you for clarifying, but this is what I'm asking you then. Then the question for me becomes clear. What do you expect to happen in the league of your own where everybody is black? Somebody got to lose.
At that point, it's a league of our own, though.
But what I'm saying to you is you just agreed that the SWAC is the closest thing that you have to a conference of your own. So what's the scrutiny will remain the same then if you have teams who are losing, you're going to talk about the guys who are losing anyway, if they're losing.
At that point, it'll be a little different, though, because you think about it. You know, the media is going to talk. But if we have a league of our own, you've got people in place, and they're not going to be so quick to give a black coach the axe. You're gonna look at everything around it. I don't think that it's going to be a thing of you're only giving them one chance, and you got this one shot, and if you lose, we'll replace you. I don't see it being like that.
But is that happening in the SWAC right now?
It's not happening in the SWAC, but I'm saying when you get all black coaches and you get high profile coaches, because I thought we were talking in reference to getting high profile coaches going and taking these positions.
But even if they're high profile, though, somebody has to win. Somebody has to lose. Like that is never going to change. Like Obama can go coach with niggas or whoever you want to pull in, and you can get a whole list of celebrities. Some of those motherfuckers are going to lose, but some of them are going to win.
But so I'm thinking, and I know you're saying the SWAC is the closest thing to our league, but I'm saying big picture, really creating our own league. We're going to need alliances. And you don't want to. So when you're getting your league, you're not going to want to just draft players that are from HBCUs. You're going to want to draft players that are at PWIs as well. And so that's why I say if coaches go to some of these PWIs, you still go to the HBCUs, but you're at the PWIs as well. Now you have as Ubon said earlier, you can cast with a larger net and you can build rapports with all these different colleges and get access to all these different athletes. So that's kind of what I'm looking at.
Okay. All right. So I guess I kind of get what you're saying.
We agree to disagree.
Yeah, that's gonna have to be one, because I'm like, well, you know, the players and stuff still don't eliminate the fact that even if you got your own league, like there's winners and losers, so scrutiny is going to come anyway. But I was kind of trying to see where your mindset was, because if you consider the SWAC to be like the closest to what is a black, you know, a black league or our league, because you look at the HBCUs as our schools, right? You know what I'm saying? So,
and you got a few, Not the SWAC, you got the MEAC. Those are like the two that I can say off the top of my head. But where there are HBCUs, there are going to be leagues conferences that are dominated by HBCUs. So the SWAC and the MEAC are the two biggest ones. And typically, that, like I said, that Celebration Bowl is a bowl game for the winner of the MEAC and the winner of the SWAC play each other in the Celebration Bowl. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think last year might have been North Carolina A&T. Fuck them. And and Grambling, you know what I mean? Or something like that. But it typically is a SWAC and the MEAC. So for me, just the notoriety and just giving them a better schedule, right? So just giving them the players that can compete on the big stage, and then setting them up with the schedule where they can show what they can do. I think just a couple years ago, it might have been 2019, Howard played Nevada, and they were a huge underdog. And I think Cam Newton's younger brother was the quarterback at Howard, and they upset Nevada. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the, like, you know, give them a chance, give them an opportunity and see what they do. with this move with Alabama State and with North Carolina Central coming out to UCLA. Now imagine being a coach and going into a kid's house trying to recruit and saying like, hey, bro, within your career here, you're going to get to play at UCLA. That sounds a lot better than somebody else's, you know, hey, you're going to get a couple games in the state of Alabama, you know, staying at the motel. Like when you come out to Southern California,
we going to catch the bus over there. You might have to ride on somebody's handlebars on their bike to get to the stadium.
So it's a sales pitch, or it's a selling point to a young recruit that's weighing their options, and you know, whoa, we get to play at UCLA, we get to go to the Rose Bowl, we get to experience Los Angeles. We're gonna be out there probably for, you know, get out there on Thursday, and we don't leave until Sunday. We're gonna get to really turn up and enjoy ourselves and experience everything about LA that, you know, typically we will never, you know, not saying never, but
you could say never.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. You know, so it's just a different vibe, because like I said, me just looking at my text messages when the shit came out, there's a vibe already from the alumni, you know, from the kids that's there now. So, you know, by the time we roll around to 2023, we didn't have 2 years to prepare for it. I expect that we're going to show up accordingly, and we're going to give them a little feel of what it is. You know what I mean? And again, remember, you know, the HBCUs at the football games, you don't really get the tailgates like that. You might get a tailgate during homecoming, but normally at a normal HBCU game, HBCUs, the way they're set up, the campus doesn't want you drinking.
Yeah.
So it's different. You get what I'm saying? So like, there's a different vibe. So you get to bring our culture out here to the West Coast, but then we still get to enjoy the other culture, the other side, where it's like, hey, you can tailgate, drink in the parking lot, you know, barbecue, do your thing. And now it's the you get to see the best of both worlds, and it just gives kids a different experience. I hope and pray that they can get some of the student body to get out here. You know, it's gonna be tough. I think typically, like, you know, when I was in school and we used to have big games, and it was like a huge game, they might put some kids on a bus and take them to Virginia, or take them to the, you know, the next state over, and you pay like $30 to get on the bus and go there and watch the game or whatever. This is a West Coast trip, so it's different. You know, I don't know how many people is trying to take the train or take the bus from North Carolina to LA, but you know, if you can get some of the student body out there, some young 19, 20 year olds that's ready to turn up, ready to show school spirit and shit, it can get you know, it can get crazy out there.
You're gonna have the white folks out at the Rose Bowl like, oh my God, they turned it into poetic justice. I thought I saw Cutting Pete out there.
Cutting Pete.
Family reunion.
In Uban.
The football,
like the halftime show is gonna be crazy. And then I'm curious to know if UCLA is gonna do a battle of the bands.
No, they're not ready.
They don't want to do that.
I think that was the thing I used to look forward to after the football games was the battle of the bands. Like, man,
right? So you know, Alabama State and North Carolina Central have both been a part of the battle of the bands, like nationally, right? And then I don't know if people understand, but remember when Beyonce did the whole HBCU thing?
Yes,
that was the Alabama State. That was the Alabama State band that did that was in the HBCU or in the video that she did where she was repping all the HBCUs. That was the Alabama State. What's the name of that band, Kev?
You talking about the Sting? You talking about the Stingettes?
No, well, I thought that's the drill team.
Yeah, the Hornets. They're the Hornets.
Right. So either way, you know, I think that UCLA is in for a treat when it comes to, you know, how they gonna show out with the halftime show. And again, I'm not expecting too much from the game. Obviously, you know, they have a better team, you know, just based on the recruits that they have. So they should, you know, dominate on the scoreboard. But, you know, the exposure is what I'm talking about. So like I said, I'll say it again, Alabama State, keep it cute. All right.
Fuck that shit. Turn up all the way.
They ain't trying to have no battle of little bands with y'all.
Yeah. So
UCLA drum major ain't got enough flexibility. That nigga be done
torn an ACL or something trying to do right. some shit.
It's the Mighty Hornets. The Mighty Hornets, and they were in Beyonce's 2019 Netflix concert, Homecoming. So, okay. And they've played at the Honda Battle of the Bands. Both teams have played the Honda Battle of the Bands, and I think they've both been in the Rose Parade before, which is cool. So, okay. Again, like I said, I'm looking forward to that, and I didn't want to really turn this conversation into that. This is more about prime time, and this is more about Jackson State and what he's doing over there, and how he's opening doors and really giving former Black players that have cachet, just kind of showing them the way and letting them know that they have an opportunity, that they can make a difference. You know, a lot of these guys, when they retire, they'll go and coach high school football. Instead of coaching high school football, fuck it, take a HBCU job. You know, like, they can use the exposure. You know, it'll boost ticket sales. It'll energize the team. It'll energize the school. It'll energize the community around you. You know, the only fucked up thing about Deion's first game is that somebody went into his locker room and stole some of his shit.
Yeah.
I think somebody stole some of his belongings, you know. But hey, nigga, you at HBCU. You got to move accordingly, bro. Like, that's part of the HBCU.
Put the chains on the door.
All them shit is surrounded by the projects. Y'all surrounded by the projects, Ubon?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Shit. And that's the thing about HBCUs. They put them in areas where, man, North Carolina Central, anybody that went to Central know, we lived, like, our dorm, the freshman dorm for the guys, was literally across the street from the projects. And if you lived on the first floor, they would tell you, don't leave your windows propped open, because niggas would jump through the windows with the heat out and rob you. If you live on the first floor, I was on the third floor. So, you know, but it was crazy. These niggas are sneaking to the dorms. You know, they trying to rob you. If you leave your window open because you ain't got AC. Right. You know, this is the old school.
Yeah.
These is old school dorms. Now, since I've been there, we've had a lot of renovations, and they've upgraded a lot of the stuff. And I think they no longer have that original dorm that was there. Chidley Hall, for anybody that went to North Carolina Central. It was crazy. But in that dorm, right, we had it was almost like the Carter. Right. So it was like four sided. And in the middle of it was a basketball court. And like, so you could literally stand, like, you could literally come to your window if you had like a inside dorm, like if your dorm was on the inside, like, you know, on the inner side of the dorm, your windows would directly face the basketball court in the middle. It was like something out of Rucker Park or some shit, right? And we probably like three stories high. But the kids from what's that prominent school in Durham? The high school Tracy McGrady went to out there in Durham.
Mount Zion Academy.
I believe that's it. They used to come down there and they would ball against like dudes on our basketball team. So Tracy McGrady balled at that, you know, balled in that court in Chidley Hall. So we opened that motherfucker up to the hood. Like, the hood is coming in there. Kids that used to, that's on their way to UNC, kids that's on their way to Duke. Like, they come through Chidley Hall. And in the middle, and when that shit used to pop and you used to get like the prominent kids there, you'll see motherfuckers hanging out the window.
Yeah.
Watching that shit. That shit'll be packed. Like, that was, but nigga, that's what I'm talking about when I say like the HBCU experience. You ain't getting that shit at Carolina. You ain't getting that shit at Duke. Like, kids from Carolina, I was there during the Rashad McCants, Sean May, Raymond Felton, Marvin Williams era.
And they were right? The champions.
Yeah. These dudes used to come up to Central to come holler at chicks. Like, they wasn't staying over there. They wasn't keeping it, you know, they was coming to the hood. They wanted to see what it was about. So, you know, I'm glad we starting to get our propers, as they would say. But, you know, I think it's another 10 to 15 years. And before I continue I'll cut off my rant right here. The thing that I really am enjoying seeing now is that they're talking more about HBCUs in general, as opposed to like highlighting Howard. Oh my gosh, it's Howard, it's Grambling, it's Morehouse, it's Spelman, and then that's it. Like, not in, like, them not the only four. Like, every time you got a rich person that's donating money, they donating it to Howard. Howard is good. They don't need the money no more. Like, they got enough. You know what I mean? Like, they're dealing with gentrification now because the neighborhoods around Howard has been you know, elevated so much that the neighborhoods around them are being gentrified. So now they have white neighbors that surround Howard, and they're getting into it with the students because they feel that they should be able to walk their dogs through the campus, their dogs shitting on the campus, doing all this stuff. And they're like, hey, it's not just your, you know, it's not just your neighborhood. It's our neighborhood too. Whereas, yeah, you know, 20, 30 years ago, y'all didn't even want to be in the neighborhood because it was a black college right there.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, I'm glad that a lot of HBCUs, other than the top four or five that everybody knows, Grambling, Howard, Morehouse, Spelman, are getting, you know, are getting their time to shine as well, man. And I need to see more of that.
So, yeah, so Uban, yeah, I got a question for you, man. What did they call the basketball court? What was the name that they gave the court?
I believe it was the Dungeon.
Okay,
the
yeah.
Dungeon.
That's the thing.
The Dungeon, man.
At the HBCU's DP, they named the court. So our outdoor court was called the Band-Aid. And so same thing you're talking about. Like the college players, everybody would come to the Band-Aid. And everybody in the neighborhood would come to the Band-Aid. The person that I used to play against on the Band-Aid is a rapper now, 2 Chainz. So 2 Chainz was out in the state when I was there. And he was, you know, trying to do his music then. And man, he was nice, man. He was real nice. We about the same height. And you know, he could shoot, man, was nice, but was a cool thing. And then we had a gym. When it got cold, we go in the gym. Mm-hmm. The gym was called the Sweat Box. So we went
okay.
There.
So you had to Uban. So y'all had the Dungeon, the Sweat Box, the Band-Aid, and niggas using climbing hooks and ropes, robbing niggas on the third floor in the dorm.
No, that wasn't. They was robbing you on the third floor. There's
no, I'm saying niggas elevated to using climbing hooks and ropes. Like, fuck that. We're going to get these third floor niggas, too.
We done ran through the whole first floor.
Uban, the funny thing was about the HBCU where I was at, Alabama State, the niggas that was doing the robbing was usually the Miami niggas. So it was like, if a nigga got robbed or pistol whipped or something, it was a Miami nigga. It was somebody.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Oh,
I mean, I'm telling you, bro. Like it was a vibe, man. It was a whole energy, man. And if you weren't there, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, just the stages, man. Like the stages from my freshman year, being new out there and kind of just trying to find my way through my senior year. Where I think I was one of them. I was there 5 years, so yeah. By the time I checked out, I was, you know, OG Bumpy Johnson out there type shit. So it was, you know, just to go from, you know, to see the level up, the way you leveled up and the different shit you did, and just the vibe, man. It was you can't recreate that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like any other institution. So, it's a one-of-a-kind type of experience.
So, in other words, Uban was at the HBCU for 5 years. He was from L.A. Everybody knew he was from L.A. Uban had hoes. Let's just...
hey, listen. Hey, I was shown love.
Uban.
I was shown love.
I had him.
Hey, I was man, shown... I was,
listen, brother, I was there for a year. I know the love that L.A. dudes get.
Yeah.
See, man, I was definitely, man. Wish I would have went to the HBCU, man.
I was definitely showing love.
Oh man, incredible, for sure. Incredible.
Hey, but Uban, one thing you said, shout out to Howard. You know, my mom went to Crenshaw High School. She was offered a full ride scholarship to Howard coming out of high school. And they were kind of on my radar. Like, I used to think about going to Howard because of my mom and all that stuff. She wasn't able to go. Well, she went, but then she started having children. She had kids young. So she ended up, I think, having my brother when she was like 19 or something like that. So that was kind of derailed. But you made a good point about the allocation of funds, man. And it almost seems like there's an effort to create an Ivy League of the HBCUs, or a separation between institutions that are, you know, considered HBCUs and affiliated and all that kind of stuff. And I do agree that there needs to be an effort to bring everybody up to, you know, another level. And that's kind of like going back to the thing about Deion Sanders is, you know, if he's able to have some success I hope people do follow him and bring the other schools up to another level. Like, I don't want it just to be Jackson State is a powerhouse and they smacking the shit out of everybody else and they just so weak. I would rather it be, okay, Deion Sanders is at Jackson State. Now, oh, so-and-so, you know, Chris Carter is coaching, you know, Florida A&M, Alabama State, whatever, you know.
He's
at and it just becomes, yeah, North Carolina Central or Alabama State, and it just becomes a situation to where everybody's starting to level up. You know what I mean? So I think that was a super valid point, and people need to kind of really put that into perspective, man, and not like if you're getting your shit together and you making moves, like, hey, man, let's try to strengthen this entire league. Just like coaches recruit players, recruit some coaches. You know what I'm saying? Hey, Deion, man, I hope you recruit some dudes who you say, hey, man, I would love to see you across the field so I can beat y'all asses. You know, some shit like that. Like,
right. Because you got to know that it's not the – so it won't be the money because they don't have the resources to get somebody with the cachet of a Deion. Deion is in a position where he doesn't need the money. So he's going to build – like, him going there is one of those what's that favor for a favor type deal, like, hey, listen, I help, you know, reinvigorate your program, and I get notoriety as, like, you know, the first black coach in, since Doug Williams or since, you know, Eddie Robb to come out here and go to a HBCU and do something or be successful out there. And, you know, he also got to bring along his two sons that he's coached up since they were in Little League. So, you know, he has his two sons. I think one committed to another school and they totally like, fuck y'all, I'm out of here. I'm going to play with my pops. Right. So, you know, like he had that. So if you bring on a new coach, you probably have to have somebody that doesn't need the financial security because they already have it. Then they can focus on just, you know, just recruiting. They can focus on coaching and they don't have to worry about, like, damn, like, is my family good? And, you know, my kids, are they situated with school or whatever? All those things that the average coach would have to worry about, you know? So,
right. But you know what, man? It's like this too, though. It's what you said about him, you know, being a guy, first guy since Eddie Robinson in Doug Williams. Yeah, Doug Williams won a Super Bowl, right? And Eddie Robinson, Hall of Fame coach. Deion Sanders, it's his celebrity that is making this an even bigger deal, right? But just imagine if he has some guys who he played against who also have names, and they are just in this because let's be real, a lot of them want to give back to the game anyway. Like you said, Ubon, they're going and coaching in high schools, right? They're developing youth. Go to these colleges, man. Go on a bigger stage. People would love to see, you know, a Deion Sanders versus a, you know, a Chris Carter or somebody, like, you know. Like, they would love to see that shit. And
so Jerry Rice, if you're listening, Jerry, take your ass to Mississippi Valley where you played and go back and coach. We need you, Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry Rice too busy doing commercials with Brett Favre for the old man shit.
Avery Johnson, take your ass to Southern University, your alma mater, and go coach the Jaguars. Avery Johnson, yes.
Yeah.
Alabama. Take your ass over there.
Yeah, man. What's up, folks? We appreciate y'all tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on IG, Facebook, and Twitter at 2PsInABong. That is the number 2, WOPEEZANDABONG. 2PsInABong. You can catch our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Anchor, and more. And we're now on the One United Radio Network. You can find that at oneunitedradio.com. Again, we appreciate y'all rocking with us. We'll catch you on the next one.